In this special feature, Sports Director Quinn Roby and News Director Kylie Tuttle sit down with West Virginia University President Michael T. Benson for an in-depth conversation about the biggest stories shaping WVU. From the state of Mountaineer athletics to major news across campus, President Benson offers his perspective on where the university is headed and how sports and student life continue to evolve. Join U92 as Quinn and Kylie lead a wide-ranging and insightful interview with WVU President Michael T. Benson.
Well, thank you, first of all, for come speaking with us today. I know it's nearing the end of your first semester as your tenure as president. What have been some learning curves you've experienced over the months?
Well, first off, thank you for the invitation. It's great to be here, and I love your studio, with a view, no less.
Yeah.
No, it's been a wonderful, 3.5 months now. You asked about learning curves. Well, let me back up. 55 counties in West Virginia, I've been to 34 of them. And I've toured 16 of 25 hospitals. And the reason I mentioned that is today I was up in Pennsylvania for an announcement of a merger with what's called Independence Health System. Mm-hmm. Five hospitals up there and another acquisition that will keep these hospitals healthy and solvent and moving forward. And I've learned with WVU Medicine, we have a tendency to, as Albert Wright calls them, pick up distressed properties, you know, ones that are having a little bit of challenge. And so of all the learning curves I've experienced, probably learning about the health system and our academic medical center has been the biggest, because I've never had anything quite like this. So, you know, and also getting to know the place, getting to know the state and the people and the history, I really enjoyed that. I wouldn't call it a learning curve as much as I've called it a real opportunity to kind of dive in and adopt this as our new home. And I've loved it. I've thoroughly enjoyed getting to know the state.
So we'll go back and forth on some different questions. For me, kind of more on the sports side, how secure do you feel about WVU's position within the Big 12? And what's your overall outlook on conference realignment? It seems every year there's different schools jumping around.
Yeah, conference realignment for the time being, it seems, is fairly stable. I say that today, and who knows, tomorrow you may hear that the Big Ten announces their capital infusion with their private equity deal, and then the Michigan bolts because they don't want any part of it, or USC or somebody else. And then once something like that happens, then dominoes kind of fall. But I really like our position. I mean, our board of governors passed a resolution back in September saying that they wanted to see us in the upper quartile of the Big 12. And when you look at the upper quartile currently, It's being dominated by a private institution and a public institution. You know, BYU, nobody knows quite how much they spend, but it's clear they went out and got the number one basketball recruit in the country, mm-hmm. and their football team is doing really well. And not far behind them is Texas Tech. We know exactly what they're spending because they're a public school like we are. So a payroll rumored to be around $38 to $40 million just for 1 year. There's a reason they're in the I think they were ranked fifth or sixth in the latest CEFP poll. So we'll never be kind of on the level of where they are. They just have not only private support, but also institutional support. There's a private school you can direct any way you want. So I will never argue for our limitations. I will always argue for our opportunities where we currently are. And the fact that, for example, we decided to make the decision to do in-state tuition for every single roster, that is really significant, particularly for our Olympic sports and for our female sports, because they've never had that kind of support before, where a coach has gone out and gone on the recruiting trail and said, well, I can't afford that student because he or she is overseas, or they're from Alabama or Florida or whatever. Now they can look at it and say, I know exactly what the tuition is going to cost me, and they can reallocate funds in other areas, whatever that might be. So I'm very sanguine. I'm very optimistic about where we are. Football team continues to get better. We've had our ups and downs and fits and starts, but on balance, I think it's been a great year. And I mentioned to the group today, and I hope they didn't find it offensive, but I said, hey, as president, I'm 2-0 against Pitt. And then I joked. I said, look, I didn't call a player take a snap, but it was the teams that competed so well, and we're faring very well to our neighbor, the North.
Yep.
All right, thank you. I did want to circle back to WVU Healthcare. Because you mentioned the Independence Health System collaboration, but also the Children's Hospital has joined the Golisano Children's Alliance. Yeah. As chairman, how do you see the university's role within these collaborations, and what are your goals for WV Medicine moving forward?
Yeah, the Thomas Golisano, I mean, you talk about a gift literally dropping in your lap. Albert Wright got a letter last, I think, June or July from a gentleman. I had heard his name, but I didn't know much about him. Made his money in inventing paychecks, so payroll, and then branched off, into other ventures through his career. But his passion is particularly children's health. He had a son born with some challenges and some disabilities, and so he's kind of made it his life's mission to address that across the country. He's married to Monica Seles, if you know tennis. She was a very good tennis player back in the 80s and 90s. And he's an older gentleman and wrote this letter to Albert saying, I want to help your children's hospital. And Albert didn't know if it was serious or not, and then he followed up on it. Next thing we know, our team went up to Rochester, New York, where he's based, and he said, I'm going to do X amount of dollars for you, and I'm also doing it for the University of Connecticut's Children's Hospital, the University of Kentucky's Children's Hospital. I think on the day he announced, it was significant because that was the day that he eclipsed $1 billion of philanthropy that he had given. And there were, I think, five or six different children's hospitals, and we're one of them. So yeah, the naming amount, we had set at $25 million. So he gladly did that, but he said, I'm going to give you another $3 million. To basically fit out a bus, a custom bus that can go from community to community and serve children that can't make their way to a clinic or a hospital, which I think is one of the most gratifying parts of the gift. But that does things for Ms. Bush, who runs it over there, Amy Bush. She does a fantastic job. Registered nurse that was the first hospital I toured when I got the job. It was back in April, and I was so impressed with their mission and their commitment to kids. And as the father of five, there's nothing more important than your kids' health. And I'm really inspired by that. I really think it takes us to a whole different level.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
So with your previous stop at Coastal, could you see something like those concession stands, kind of what they're doing for football games there? I know there have been some people that have wondered. It's the first of any kind. Could you see something like that here, or is the money just kind of different here with this being a power program?
Yeah, I think it's a little different. And our food partner at Coastal was Aramark, and we have for our stadium here, while Sodexo is no longer servicing the university campus, they still have the athletic contract. So we haven't had them come forward. Aramark actually came forward when Chance Miller, the AD at Coastal Carolina, approached them and said, look, you know, we'll make it up on volume in terms of what we charge for, which is, you know, alcohol, beer sales, and then hamburgers. Those are kind of the specialty items, and pizza. So the stuff that doesn't cost as much, the water, the soda, the popcorn, the hot dogs, we'll do those for free. And it has been hugely popular.
Yeah.
And Coastal football started off really slow, and then they've gotten better. But it's brought so much attention to the university that it's a brilliant marketing move. And I'd love to see if we could do something like that.
Yeah.
But I think we're at a little different scale and a bigger enterprise. So I don't know if it's possible.
All right. And then you recently attended the Association of Public and Land Grant Universities meeting in Philadelphia. What were some of your initial takeaways from the experience or speaking with other land-grant institution leaders?
Yeah, so I came across a lot of old colleagues that I hadn't seen for a while. It was a really well-run meeting. The woman who is now the head of it, her name's Waudette Cruzado. I first met her when I was president of Southern Utah University, and she was the president of Montana State. We were in the same conference, the Big Sky Conference, together. And she had a great tenure at Montana State, a land-grant institution. And oftentimes you don't think of land-grant schools like Cornell and MIT and, for a while, Yale. But there are a whole kind of broad spectrum of schools with really big endowments and really kind of expansive physical plant. And then there are smaller schools. And the association itself is both public and land-grant universities. So we're the only land-grant, along with West Virginia State. They came in 1890 is when they got their moral land grant script. But it's always good to be with like-minded institutions.
Yeah.
and kind of hear some of the challenges that they have. You know, what sets us apart, and I'll use this as an example because you may have heard that we put out kind of this charge that we want to make a run for the Association of American Universities, the AU, which is a long process. We're not anywhere near where we need to be considered as a viable candidate. But I had the dean of pharmacy tell me the other day, he said, guess how many AAU schools have a school of pharmacy? And I guess I said, 20. He said, you're right. And it was a complete guess. He said, guess how many schools have dental, medical, nursing, and pharmacy together? I said, I don't know. He said, it's only 12. And there are only 11 that have those four plus public health. So we are kind of in a rare category of schools that offers that spectrum of professional health degrees, and then all the ancillary programs like respiratory therapy and physical therapy and exercise physiology, all those other programs that aren't those professional degrees that I mentioned. So we have a lot to do to get ready for an opportunity like the AU, but as I've said, if the University of South Florida can do it, and they're a former member of the Big East with us, and if you look at their institutional profile, the number of students, the number of PhDs they produce, amount of research and development they do, we're on many levels on par with them. We have a ways to go to make up in R&D, but all that's a long response to a short question of how the meeting was. But the meeting was excellent, and it was good to hear. Charlie Baker came and spoke, the president of the NCAA. They had a retired president's panel, the former president of the University of Florida, and the former president of Ohio State that now is the president of the University of California system, Michael Drake, good friend of Gordon Gee. And I had a lot of people say, hey, you're the guy that's following Gordon Gee. So, and then I am and trying my best, but he is a legend and known across the world, really.
Yeah. So with athletes, mental health is a huge thing. What steps is WVU taking to ensure that the student athletes are supported both academically and mentally amid the pressure that college sports brings?
Yeah, it's taken to a whole new level now with the prevalence of betting, with rosters that you have now athletes getting paid. So fans, I think, are taking liberty and license saying, hey, I'm helping pay for this kid. You know, he or she should be doing better. And fans have no right to have that against an 18, 19, 20-year-old or to have kind of hang that over their head. I just think that's just wholly wrong and improper. So we are trying our best to make sure we provide every possible resource to make sure they're in a good space physically and in a good headspace mentally. And whether it's counseling, whether it's advising, whether it's support from their team. You know, our coaches have taken additional training to kind of spot those signs that you can discern that there might be some turmoil. And, you know, I as the father of five kids, I've got one in college and one going to college next year. And, you know, I've found that peer-to-peer support is so important, that when teammates rally around a teammate, that's in many ways the most important help that they can give. So all those things in the aggregate, I think we're doing a really good job helping our student athletes.
All right. And then the university has recently established several partnerships with Hope Gas. Mm-hmm. What role do you see Hope Gas playing within the university, and are there any future partnerships in progress?
Well, the biggest one, of course, is the name on the Coliseum, which is $23 million over 10 years. That's a really sizable gift. And, you know, I've heard some of the feedback that people don't like the name to be being changed. And in this environment, you have to look at every possible avenue to generate revenue. And Hope Gas, I guess it's a company that's been around a long time, but they kind of brought back the name Hope Gas and purposely didn't call it Hope Gas Coliseum. They just called it Hope Coliseum, and that was their choice. Mm-hmm. And I'm very glad for that. I like the signage. They've done a nice job with the signage. Mm-hmm. They're helping with painting the Evansdale campus water tower, and the neon, the lit up WVs that we're gonna have on all four sides. So they continue, and they do a lot in our PIC lab on the Evansdale campus. They have supported scholarships. They've done a lot. Morgan O'Brien, their CEO, has become a really good friend, and he's from Pittsburgh originally. Was on the board at Pitt, but he's adopted West Virginia as his home, and he really loves the campus. He loves what we're doing. And we're very, very grateful for their support.
All right. Thank you.
So in a recent announcement with Milan, Milan Puskar Stadium is going to get some renovations starting in the near future. What facilities or infrastructure projects are currently top priorities for WVU and WVU Athletics?
Well, I would put that one right at the top of the list. Yeah. They have some other ideas for an indoor facility for track and field and also soccer. We have certainly the indoor facility for football, but that really is kind of football specific. And other Olympic sports need a space. You know, I'm thinking about soccer right now. I mean, they're playing tomorrow night. It's going to be cold. And you don't want to ruin the pitch, so you need a place where you can get in and condition and practice. So that stadium tower project is going to be really cool, though. Mm-hmm. If you've seen the renderings, I've heard Ren speak many times, and he's talked about the lack of premium spaces for our fan base. And I think we were second to last, if not bottom, of the Big 12 in terms of the spaces. And, you know, we want to provide an in-seat experience that's great for everybody. You know, some people prefer to be outside. Yeah. Some people want to be right in the midst of the student section, or they want to be next to the band. And I don't in any way begrudge anybody where they want to sit. But we found that there are fans that want to have that experience that's it's comfortable. You know, I've been in some suites where I was in WVU Medicine Suite the other day, and you could barely turn around. It was so mean. People were absolutely shoehorned in there. And it'll provide space that, to my mind, is even more important, space that you can use year-round. It's not just 6-7 days in the fall. This is a space that can be used for meetings, receptions, you know, clubs, all that sort of thing. And I think it's going to be a beautiful addition. And you look at it, I mean, Milan Puskar Stadium is a great historic site, but since 1980, not a whole lot has been done on that mm-hmm. on that side of the stadium.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a great addition to campus.
Yeah.
All right. And then WVU received record high freshman retention during this fall, and student enrollment has been one of your ongoing efforts and goals. What are your goals for the spring semester, and what are some strategies the university is or will be taking to keep moving forward?
Well, spring semester, we also really pay keen attention on what we call the fall to spring retention number. So that's that retention number that you mentioned is the 85.1%, which is the fall to fall. That's the highest ever. So we want to make sure kids that enrolled in fall of this year will come back in the spring of 2026. We've already initiated bus tours, so within a certain mile radius, we pay for buses to go and pick up students at their high schools. We had another bus just on campus yesterday. Excuse me. And we found that those juniors and seniors that come to campus and see what the university has to offer, they're more inclined to apply, and we hope eventually matriculate and come to WVU. And then, you know, either... we just had another Discover Day on Saturday. I was there hosting a whole bunch of prospective students on campus. And then we have Decide Day, I know, in the early spring. And all those dates are really important because you have to – then you start getting an idea of what your freshman class is going to look like numbers-wise. That's when people make a decision. They make a housing deposit. They hopefully register for to be an official student and start getting their schedules put together. So there are key markers along that course of the spring semester that – all tied to the fact that, as I've said, recruiting students and enrollment is not the purview of one area on campus. It belongs, it's a responsibility for everybody. And I hope people feel a part of that.
So you've been traveling the state of West Virginia. That was kind of your first thing. You said you wanted to try to get to all 55 counties. You were just recently in Greenbrier County for that Greenbrier tip-off game for the women's. How important or how crucial is it that the athletics programs travel to different parts of the state? The men's team is going to be playing in Charleston soon.
Yeah.
And how crucial is that for the athletic programs?
Well, I've been to Greenbrier once. And that was in the summer for the business summit, which was really mm-hmm. neat. But I'd never been to a basketball game, and I went down with some colleagues and had the chance to go in that ballroom and only sat, 1,100? You were there. I mean,
yeah, it was about 1,100.
Probably 50 Duke fans.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Just a ton of gold and blue, mm-hmm. and the environment was just awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I was in disbelief like a lot of people when the last 10 seconds of that first half resulted in, you know, six of our players getting booted. And it took the officials like a half an hour. I've never seen a longer halftime.
Me either.
Without any entertainment, by the way.
Yeah, right. There was nothing going on. Yeah.
So, to your point, though, I think it's really important when we have chances to do things like that, to play Wake Forest in Charleston, to, you know, our baseball team playing in different places.
Yep.
And baseball, before you know, it's going to be here.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one thing we'd found in Coastal. Baseball started like in February because yep. we had the weather to host people in the from the Northeast. But I'm really looking forward to baseball season and any chance we get to showcase how good our teams are and do it in a different sort of arena or a venue, I think is really important.
All right. And then the lighting of Woodburn ceremony is coming up.
Yeah.
What inspired you to sort of pick up this tradition, and are any other efforts being planned as part of a sort of like beautification initiative?
Yeah, I initially saw a picture of Woodburn, which I love. I just think that's the coolest building, and it's so iconic. I mean, people often think of West Virginia University, think of the PRT and Woodburn Hall, maybe Pushcart Stadium, the Coliseum, but Woodburn, you know, academically right there, our second oldest building. And I thought, man, that is really neat. Why don't we do that anymore? And I got different answers. Finances, or it was inconvenient. And I said, we're going to bring it back because the local people, the kind of the folks that are here year round, I never want us to ever take for granted our community, our city, because, you know, when 25,000 students descend on campus in the summer, you know, early mid-August, it really is very disruptive for the locals. So I hear it out in the community sometimes, oh, traffic's terrible, lines are long, but the economic benefit to our community is incalculable. I mean, imagine Morgantown without West Virginia University. So I think it's really important for us to be a good partner in our community, to go out of our way to help create traditions and kind of memory moments for our local community and to bring people together. So we'll close down University Avenue and have some food trucks and hot chocolate. The folks from Huntington Bank that have helped, and also Mike John and his company, the gas company, have helped as well. And we're very grateful to everybody that's helping us bring it back. But I think campuses need to have traditions, and that's what ties alumni, community people to that campus. And I hope this is one that will go on for years and years.
Thank you.
So I don't know if you have this question, but for me as a West Virginian, I'm really curious, out of the counties that you visited so far, what's been your favorite one and why?
Now, you're going to get me in trouble now because it's like my five kids. Which one do I like the best? Boy, that's a hard one. I would have to I really enjoyed going out to the Panhandle because I hadn't been there.
Yeah.
And we went to first Berkeley and then Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
And Jefferson is at the very tip of the state, and there's so much history there. We had a chance to go to Charles Washington's house, for whom Charlestown is named, George Washington's younger brother. I really found that really fascinating. And it's a really cool little town.
Yeah.
I have to say, when we went up to Independence Hall, that was pretty neat. And that was one of our first counties. What's the county at the very north? B. Starts with a B.
Berkeley?
No, Hancock.
Hancock. Yes, I think so, yes.
Yeah. So they said HBO. Hancock, another one, Ohio County.
Yes.
So I need to learn the counties. But Hancock was very memorable. And then we went to Independence Hall the next day there in Wheatley. That was pretty neat. But it's hard to say. I don't have any. I can't say I have a favorite. The day we got to Pleasants County.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool because a train came right down Main Street.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd never seen anything quite like that before.
Yeah.
We were inside this little pharmacy, a really cool pharmacy run by a W graduate. So I could go on and on because every place we've been, there have been these kind of serendipitous moments where we meet somebody or they show us a historic location or a historic site that I really get jazzed about. Or we go see a WVU hospital. And I'm just blown away by the difference they make in these little counties.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of Braxton County, you know, the community access hospital they have there or some other places. So it's a state rich with history and tradition, and West Virginians love their history. I've learned that.
And have you picked up on, Tony Caridi says it all the time, that there's always a West Virginia connection. Have you picked up on that as you're traveling outside of the state?
I'll have a shirt on or somebody will see my backpack with my name tag on it. And There's like, you know, let's go, Mountaineers. You know? Sometimes you'll be in an airport with those moving conveyor belt, you know,
yep.
moving walkways, and somebody will come by and go in the other direction, and I'll yell that. It's really cool because you see the WVU everywhere, and people have such pride in their school.
Yeah.
And that's neat.
Yeah, we went to Denver for a conference a few weeks ago, and we were walking down the street, and the group of us that were there had our U92 shirts on that has the flying WV on it.
Yeah.
And walking by, somebody said, let's go. And then we proceeded to say Mountaineers. Didn't think that that would happen all the way out in Denver, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I listened to three guys before the game. They're hilarious. But they told the story about some guy in Prague, at like some violin concerto.
Yep.
And a guy comes strolling in with a WVU hat on.
Yep.
And next thing you know, he runs across and comes across a woman whose dad still lives here.
Yep.
And so there's always a connection. That's why I always try and wear the gear when I'm out and about.
All right. And then I'm going to kind of bounce off of that, I guess. You've been meeting with different programs, departments, community outreach. You recently visited Mountaineer Medal, I believe.
I did. That was yesterday, in fact, yeah.
Yeah. And then what are some of your upcoming efforts to further connect with the community?
So Mountaineer Middle was really an attempt to get into our local schools. I don't ever want our local schools to feel like we take them for granted. You know, if we look at our biggest feeder school, it's going to be Mon County. But I need to get out to those schools. And going to Mountaineer Middle was really an attempt to show, too, that you can't wait until a sophomore or junior or even a freshman year in high school. You got to start talking about college now.
Yeah.
So my message to all these kids is whatever you choose to do beyond high school, make sure it's something. Is it a trade? Is it a certificate or a diploma? Is it a two-year degree, a four-year degree? Make sure you're planning now to do something beyond high school. So I think it's really important for me. I'll have to look at my schedule because they program me quite a bit. But, you know, I'm going to have a chance, I think, the first week in December to speak to all the high school principals down at the Greenbrier.
Okay.
And that's going to be my message. I mean, we love it if everybody in West Virginia chose WVU. But I tell students, you got to find the place that's right for you. We're going to do everything we can to convince you that this is the right place for you. But you'll know it when you step foot on campus, when you find that professor, and you find that roommate or that classmate that kind of, you know, the light goes on and they say, this is where I want to be. So it's really important for us to get out and about here. After I went to Mountaineer Middle yesterday, I went to our industrial music studio over there in, what's across the bridge? This little town over, the W.
Westover?
Westover,
yes,
holy cow, yes.
I was going to say Waterton, no, Westover. So yeah, just across, right off of Beechhurst. And, you know, we have kind of these pockets of presence all around our county. But I think it's really important for us to be visible and to be outgoing and tell our local high school kids and junior high kids that we want them to come to WVU.
So how do you balance maintaining competitive athletic programs with the academic mission of the university?
Well, I would argue that they're not mutually exclusive. It's
yeah.
not like, I mean, they go hand in hand. And, and I've heard Wren, and I love this line, and I have to attribute it to him. He said, what we do in athletics is not the most important, but it is the most visible.
Yeah.
And you pick up your local newspaper, you go online, and, 70% of the stories are going to probably be about one of our athletic teams or how they performed. Or you always want to, I think, tell stories about those student athletes that tie them to, you know, this young man or this young woman came here as the first in their family to go to college, and the athletic scholarship was the means to the end. And what was the end? To get that degree. So I think you can have wonderful academics with great athletics. And I had wrote an article I used to write for Huffington Post. I just blanked on it. It's so long ago. But they would let me write about whatever I wanted to. And I wrote an article about the impact or the influence of football, where every great public institution in this country at one time or another was really good at football. And at one point, the largest stadiums in our country were at Ivy League schools, where it was the Yale Bowl or Harvard's stadium or I think Dartmouth had a really big stadium. But look at all the public schools that are highly ranked. You know, the number one public school, public university in the country is probably UC Berkeley, UCLA, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida, Texas A&M. They've got great academics, But at some point in their history, they've been in the upper echelon, or they persisted in the upper echelon of competitive athletics. And I think that just goes to show that the people, yes, they go to university to get a degree, which is the most important thing, but they also like to cheer for a winner. And so you can invest in both and do it in a way that makes people proud.
All right, thank you. And then in your State of the University address, you mentioned working with the city and state to potentially build a pedestrian mall and close down University Avenue. Do you have a current concept for that, or are there any plans being made?
Well, I noticed the DA, the Daily Athenaeum, which I get right in my office, they had a cover story on it just the other day. And I think it generated quite a bit of commentary and opinion. And I understand this has been a long, decades-long quest. I certainly appreciate the efforts in the past. I didn't mean to sound glib about it at all in my State of the University that we're assuming this is going to be an easy lift, because it's going to take a lot of work. But I think if we can come up with a traffic pattern that makes sense, that doesn't further clog up already kind of clogged arteries around campus, and most importantly, it provides safe passage for our students in between Woodburn, Chitwood, Martin Hall, and the mountain there and other parts of campus, I think that's really, really important. So I am absolutely shocked we haven't had more incidents than we have. And sadly, at Coastal Carolina, we were right in the middle of two very busy state highways, 544 to our south and 501 to our north.
Yeah.
We actually had a fatality a few years ago on 544. Mm-hmm. And so we got the funding to build the pedestrian overpass. We already have an overpass kind of on a little farther down University that connects with Ogilvie. Mm-hmm. But it makes a lot of sense to create just a place where you can have buses that they can pull in and drop students off.
Yeah.
But the majority of that space is just pedestrian. And imagine how you can landscape it and create hangout spots, and in a nice spring day or a late fall, out there in Adirondack chairs and just hanging out and food trucks and that sort of thing. And I think it's, we don't have enough green space on campus either, believe. We don't have quads like you see at some places.
Yeah.
One reason is we got hills everywhere.
Yeah.
It's hard to put a quad at a 30-degree angle.
Yeah, right.
So we have to be creative, and I think that's one of the best spots and the most picturesque, and it could be this kind of epicenter of activity right there in the middle of campus.
And my last question that I have, how can WVU better engage students and alumni in coming back supporting athletics year-round in the different sports?
I think we have to be competitive, but having said that, I'll qualify it with this. How many stadiums will get full for a 4-6 football team like we did against Colorado? I mean, we had 61,000 people there.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, I haven't either. Not with a 4, like you said, a 4-6 football team, never seen that.
I mean, Coach Prime is an attraction and all that, but still in all, I mean, our fan base, rain or shine, they love their Mountaineers. And so I will never take that for granted. We should never take that for granted. But I think the alumni love to pull for a winner. They love to see the pride. I mean, you saw the feeling on Friday. The little engine that could. and take down 15th-ranked Duke with the coach who's the coach of the national team.
Yep.
And, our baseball team, 2 super regionals back-to-back.
Yeah.
Look at cross country.
Yep.
They're running the national championship on Saturday in Missouri. Won the region title again. Look at rifle.
Yeah.
Look at volleyball. Started off red hot. Yeah, they're doing okay. Women's basketball is doing extraordinarily well. Baseball or rowing. Rowing's always good. I don't want to leave anybody off. Tennis,
yeah.
And then, of course, football and basketball, men's basketball, we have a chance to start 6-0. So all of these things, I think, get alumni very excited, and I hope they'll come back and they feel welcome here all the time.
All right, and then last semester I spoke to Coastal Carolina's student body vice president, Luke Miller, and he was very appreciative of your input and support. And then earlier this semester when you spoke to the Daily Athenaeum, you mentioned wanting Colin Rowe to have sort of an independence. So how do you balance supporting them while letting them do their own thing?
Yeah, I think just like a student newspaper is a laboratory, in many ways it's yours. I mean, you have to own it. You have to print what you want, but be responsible for it. I take the same approach to student government. I mean, they got elected by their fellow students, and my job is to support them. Of course, Colin has a seat on our board of governors, but I meet with them. I met with them last week. We went through kind of their list of priorities. I meet with them every other week, and I really appreciate both of them. I think they're both doing a terrific job. I have never seen Roe in a bad mood. I think the kid is the happiest kid I think I've ever met. And I really appreciate how committed they are to the place and to their fellow students. So I really enjoy working with them. But you're right. I have to support them, but I also have to let them do their thing. And there'll be some times when we'll disagree, and we can talk through it and see if we can come to some understanding or mutual agreement to support this or not support that. But they've been great to work with, and I look forward to the rest of the school year with them.
All right, thank you. And then I had one last question. Patrick Miller from Duquesne University has recently been named the director of the Washington Center. What helped finalize the decision to approve him for the role?
So it was not our decision. That was a decision made by the governor. If you read the language from the legislation, it's $1.5 million appropriated to the university apart from our normal appropriation. So this will be in effect until the legislature decides they don't want to fund it anymore. And in the language of the bill, it said that the governor has the final say on who is appointed. So he can then go out, Mr. Miller, who's come from Duquesne University, really smart guy, PhD from UNC Chapel Hill. Kind of a specialist in political philosophy and thought, and his job is to go out and hire some faculty that will help with the running and the execution of all the programs in the Washington Center. So looking forward to seeing what happens and introducing them to campus and getting going with it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Is there anything that we haven't spoken about or asked that you'd like to add on?
You've been very thorough, and we appreciate you kind of covered the grounds back and forth. But I will tell you this. I think it's a great time to be at West Virginia University. Yeah. There is a sense of optimism and a palpable excitement about where we can go as a university. And, you know, I remind our faculty and staff all the time, we're not here without you all. I mean, students are what kind of energize the place and give it purpose. And we hope we do well by you. And there's something we're not doing, I hope you'll let me know. And, you know, as I was driving over here tonight, I saw three students kind of waiting on the corner, and they were kind of waving. So I rolled down my window, and I said, hey, tell me about yourself. Where are you from? And I was waiting to get on University Avenue, so I wasn't holding up traffic.
Yeah.
So, you know, one was from New Jersey, one was from Virginia, and one was from Pittsburgh. And I said, well, you like it here? They said, we love it. We're sophomores. And I said, well, you came back, so thank you for that. So,
yeah.
You know, I hope students, when they see me or I see them, if they want to stop and chat, I'll do it. And tell me how your experience is going and how we can do better.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for meeting
my
with
pleasure.
Us.
Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That'll do it for today's conversation with West Virginia University President Michael T. Benson. A big thank you to President Benson for joining us. Stay tuned. More music, news, and sports coverage is coming up next. For U92, this is Sports Director Quinn Roby and News Director Kylie Tuttle. You're listening to U92 The Moose, the student voice of West Virginia University.